Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Susie Madrak with Virtually Speaking Susie, and tonight we're going to talk about the rather naked power grabs in Wisconsin, and then in the second half of the show, Michigan. My guest tonight is Jude. How do you say your last name?
It's Tosh.
Tosh. Jude Tosh, who happens to be a state employee in Wisconsin, and Dave Johnson from Campaign for America's Future, and hi, guys. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on, Susie.
Sure. First of all, let's talk about how this kind of stuff happens. Jude, we were talking before we came on about how people who run for office and they're not dealing in good faith, basically. They're not honest about their agenda.
Right, and to some extent you expect that from anyone, but you don't expect every politician to lay out everything they want to do. But in the case of, say, Walker, also an extent, the people in Ohio, the Republicans in Ohio, they either didn't say at all what they wanted or they explicitly said that wasn't what they were going to do. I know some of the Republicans in Ohio swore to their constituents that they would not oppose collective bargaining. I don't have any names, of course, but you can look this up. And here in Wisconsin, Walker never, ever, ever said that he would go after the tenets of collective bargaining, which, in Wisconsin, seeing as how we've got this strong progressive tradition, and this was the first state in the country to allow public employees to unionize and bargain collectively. If he had said that in his campaign, there's a pretty good chance he wouldn't have won anything. So, I don't know what to do about that sort of level of mendacity in campaigning. How do you hold people to account for that other than, either the next election or what we're trying to do now with the recall effort for him after he's been in office for a year?
Well, Jude, what's your take on how he won? I mean, because he didn't just win. I mean, they beat Russ Feingold.
Yeah, they beat Russ Feingold. Well, when you've got Wisconsin, it wasn't as bad as nationwide, but still much higher than normal levels of unemployment. You've got a well-funded propaganda machine that advocates against anything that might help the majority of the population, and that combined with, say the dispirited Democratic base after the 2008 election, since it was an off year, wasn't a presidential election, you had a lot of people that felt as if they hadn't been done right by, say, the Obama administration and weren't energized to go to the polls and go get out the vote. All those things come together with the, one of the banes of existence is the low information voter who is more easily swayed by such slickly produced disinformation. You get all those things that come together, and, you can have a really bad year for what I consider to be, the right side of the fence as far as politicians go.
I'm curious. There was there were a lot of commercials in Pennsylvania here where I live, and I understand in several other states. I'm wondering if they ran in Wisconsin that talked about how the Democrats in the Senate were going after Medicare. And I'm wondering if they ran in Wisconsin. They did run?
And I
think that this had, what do you think, Dave? I mean, I think this had an awful lot to do with the fact that Democrats did not respond to these ads.
I tracked that down in a post at Campaign for America's Future. The title is, you can Google it, something, if you Google Dave Johnson and $500 billion in cuts from Medicare, you'll find the post. And I just gathered these ads, a bunch of them, and they're on YouTube, so I gathered a whole bunch of these ads that ran in so many different states, and they were very careful. They ran against the name of the candidate, and they didn't say Democrat. They said, this candidate is cutting from Medicare, and that's why you should vote for so-and-so. And they did. It was universal across the country. One of the groups was called something like 60-plus something, and they bragged that they had $500 million in ads that they ran that said that. I think they were just boasting and didn't have nearly that much, but, you know, that was anonymous corporate money put into this campaign to tell voters that these people were voting against Medicare, therefore you should vote for so-and-so. And in the election, this was the first time Democrats lost the senior vote, and that was decisive, I think. So, yes, I'd say that they ran a deceitful campaign, said that they were campaigning to protect Medicare. A lot of the ads also said Social Security, and they got into office, and, of course, the first thing they're doing is going after Medicare and Social Security. So the idea that, yeah, they ran by saying one thing, and then they get the power, and then they do what they can to keep the power, to amalgamate the power and keep it in their hands and do things that nobody ever expected. And now they have this whole cover story. We were elected to cut the, you know, all this stuff. So, yeah, that I agree with you, Susie.
You know,
and I filibustered,
yeah.
I know. But
it was really
deceitful.
Infuriating. I mean, I'm watching these ads and I'm thinking, well, surely the Democrats are going to respond to this.
It's like they didn't have a clue what's really going on. The mainstream Democrats seem to have this, the pendulum swings back and forth and it's the other party and, you know, this bipartisanship thing or something. They don't defend themselves at all. It's like they think this is the same old Republicans they've always dealt with. They don't understand, I think, that this is a very different thing that's happening right now. They went after Acorn and the Democrats went along. They went after Move On and the Democrats went along. Move On, you know, the funding, one of the big funding arms, Acorn, the big voter registration arm of the, you know, they went after the trial lawyers and the Democrats all started saying, yeah, I guess there's too many lawsuits. And that was another big component of the Democratic coalition. They went after, now they're going after labor. They're just trying to take all the power they can so that they can get their stuff through. And, go ahead.
Jude, I get the distinct impression that Wisconsin does not have those kind of Democrats. Is that true?
Well, I think that part of the reason all of our senators decamped to Illinois was because they understood that there was no ability to compromise, and that was the only thing they could do to get people enough time to realize what was in this, misnamed budget repair bill, that it repairs the budget in the same sense that lighting your car on fire and pushing it off a cliff takes care of that tune-up that you need. it was ridiculous, you know, so that they realized that they weren't going to have any sort of good faith bargaining or negotiation with their opponents, and they lammed it to Illinois.
I think they found out something that might be demonstrating to others that when they did that, you know, they took a big risk on their own careers and what could be the outcome. And they found out that, hey, this people said, wow, these guys are standing up for us and appreciated it. And I don't know if they, do you think they expected that the public would rally to them like they did?
I don't think they did that at all. There was a big risk, but this is something that more people need to understand, that is, if you fight for people, they'll fight for you.
Yeah, right, you know, and they did.
And not only that, but as politicians, they're probably noticing that they're also raising a heck of a lot of money from people, too, from this. As we go out, you know, from the net roots and say, people, you should support this and reward good behavior, and people are really pitching in.
Well, they're also facing problems from it as well. I mean, you've heard about the efforts to recall Republican senators here in Wisconsin. There are also efforts to recall the Democratic ones that are funded by out-of-state groups. One of them is the one that started the whole thing is an anti-immigrant group from Utah, and they're funneling money here to to try and get these people recalled.
I wonder where they're getting that money.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
But you know, you mentioned earlier that the Republicans were attacking Medicare and Social Security and now organized labor. And if you want to look at it as a military problem, which, you know, I used to do that for a living, one of the problems the Democrats have is that they don't have any initiatives. If you're running a military operation, you always want to have an initiative. You always want to be the one making your enemy react to you. And for the last 50, to a lesser extent, 40 years, the Democrats have been fighting a rearguard action, basically just trying to defend what they've already gotten. And when you do that, you have ceded the initiative to the enemy. The Republicans have gone after one thing after another that you'd think would be safe, unbreachable sorts of defenses. But damned if they haven't had the lies and the money to hit them all one after another. And now it might be the chance that they finally, you know, attacked enough things that people here at least seem to have woken up and they're fighting back. But I'll
talk
for a while now.
This has been a very well-planned, careful, strategic campaign, this particular one that's been going on for a while. I started noticing, I think it was last March, I started noticing a real uptick in these attacks on public employee pensions and all of that. And I started noticing they were coming from what I call the usual sources, where you see these state conservative think tanks. There's this interlocking network of these things, and you'd start seeing in every state across the country, you know, all of a sudden all of these press releases and so-called reports and studies coming out from these different state groups, all of them talking about how the pension problem, the pension crisis, and all of that, and how the states are bankrupt because of these pensions and these public employee unions, all of them very similar, citing each other, backing each other up, talking about, you know, and unfortunately being able to refer to some studies that Pew Charitable Trust allowed themselves to get involved in with the Peterson Foundation. Peterson Foundation is one of these right-wing things that's always attacking these kind of things. And so we started hearing about this pension crisis, never mind that the pension crisis was caused by Wall Street and, you know, they actually sold these collateralized debt obligations and things like that to pension funds. But so anyway, here they were with the pension funds were underfunded because of tax cuts, and that's the workers' fault, right? So we started seeing it ramp up starting in March, combined, you know, with other things altogether. And so they get power in certain states or already have power in certain states. And then in 17 states, I think it is, they have rolled out this anti-public employee initiative. The real reason, and they've said so, you know, especially, what was his name, Scott Fitzgerald in Wisconsin, the Senate leader, said, look, this is about defunding the Democrats so that we can keep Obama, get him out. And it's got nothing to do with state fiscal problems. But watching these campaigns roll out, you know, step by step, very carefully planned, and we're going to roll this out, and then on the, you know, on the event calendar, we'll have this in time for this event, and we'll get this study out, and then we'll get the press on the study, and then we'll get the echo of it. You know how it's done, and we see them. And then at the very last minute, as the attack is underway, and the people start realizing, oh my God, this terrible attack on us, they start to organize to do something about it. We're very, very fortunate that the people of Wisconsin, you know, really just couldn't tolerate this and came out in the numbers they came out.
I just real quickly here, because I'm not positive I said, I just want to point out that Jude writes for First Draft, which is one of my very favorite blogs, and Dave writes for Seeing the Forest, which is another one of my very favorite blogs. And one of the reasons that I like both of these blogs so much is because they really understand, you know, these kind of issues, these working class issues, you know, that like the down and dirty of what's going on in politics. And you know, I think one of the reasons why these strategies have been so successful is they're geared toward Democrats trying to be reasonable with them.
Right.
You know, they're, and like this, I've been telling people who read my blog, you know, because I've been covering, you know, after a while, the stories just sort of repeat themselves. And, you know, and I've told my readers this several times, look, I shouldn't have to explain this to you. The fact is that if you hear something about a Democrat that sounds really crazy and horrible, you can be 99% certain that somebody made it up. And
you
know,
should be getting used to it. Like NPR should have gotten used to that.
Yeah,
this guy
O'Keefe
does what he does, you know?
Of course. It, you know, this whole idea that I don't know what it is, like, you know, liberal guilt or something. Oh, they wouldn't be mad at me if I hadn't done something, and how can I be reasonable and get them to like me again? I don't know what it is.
And you know,
I don't have that gene.
You're bringing up something that I think is interesting to note because, you know, you and I and some others have been having some private discussions about what can we call the use of power. And these guys, they're about power, grabbing power, and then using it to get what they want, you know. They get themselves to where they have their hands on the levers of power, and as we said earlier, they'll do anything and say anything to get there. And then once they're there, they'll pounce and this time they might have overreached a little, we'll see, but they use the power to then get themselves more power. They're used to power, they want power, they use power, and I think a lot of Democrats aren't. They feel like they're stepping on people's toes and you know, they're being very nice about it, and they'll never go after Republicans in this kind of a way or go after their funding sources or go after their coalitions and stuff. And that's just day-to-day operation on the right, I think.
Well, and the other fatal flaw with Democrats is this touching belief they have in facts and strategy. Well, you know, if we just explain to the voters what's really happening, then they'll understand and everything will be okay. No.
I think you just used the word strategy and Democrat in the same sentence. I think you don't mean that.
Well, no, they call it strategy. God knows, Dave, we're on a lot of the same lists and we see a lot of the same stuff. But, you know, it's like nobody knows how to, like, reach out. And this is what's been so wonderful about Wisconsin. It's like people have reached out and touched something visceral in people. You know, we're not going to take it anymore.
Right, but that wasn't really the Democrats doing it so much as the people.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And usually what happens is, and you know, you look through history, the people's lead and the leaders follow. One of the problems with combating the right wing is that you mentioned that the Democrats have this sort of quaint adherence to ideas like facts and logic and persuasive arguments. Well, when you're dealing with someone who is simply going to lie, you can't possibly cover all the avenues of attack. You can't imagine what all their lies are going to be. You know, think about, like, say, the 2004 election. The Democrats put up John Kerry for the president, a guy who was in a fairly safe duty in Vietnam and volunteered for combat duty and actually ran down and killed people by himself. Now, you can say what you want about, you know, the values of the warrior culture or, you know, that sort of, is that the test of masculinity or whatnot, but that seems to be what's more or less accepted as a really fucking manly thing to do in our society. Except they had people lie about his record. They lied about, you know, what he did. They lied, said he had self-inflicted wounds, that he was a brown noser and all this kind of stuff, and totally distorted any kind of fact when prior to that you couldn't have imagined someone saying, okay, here's a Bronze Star decorated war veteran. Let's just drag his name through the mud with totally transparent lies, because we can get away with it and we'll win. Nobody would have imagined that that could have happened before that. And you can't possibly anticipate those sorts of lies. So you're left flat-footed when they come out. I mean, how do you respond to that? How can you anticipate that? You just can't. When you're facing a completely unethical, unscrupulous opponent, they're always going to have a leg up on you.
And if you just try to refute them, then they'll get four lies ahead of you before you're done refuting the first one.
Right. It's the, well, when did you stop your wife question, you know?
But this is what I'm talking about how Democrats always fall into the trap of logic. They attack you on something, and you say, no, here's the president's birth certificate right here.
Right.
You know, and they think that that's going to change something that's been said over and over and over. And this is why, and I see it so many times when a Democrat or a liberal group or something says something usually out of context or misquoted or something, like what just happened with NPR, and liberals let it happen.
Over and over.
Over and over. With Acorn, they let it happen with NPR. It just happens all the time because they don't have a fighting spirit. I don't know why, but they just don't.
Well, I want to go back to something Jude said a minute ago. Two things here. First of all, when you say they, you know, there's a lot of great Democrats out there that are fighting hard. And what Jude said a minute ago, though, about how, you know, the leadership has to come from the people, and that's what we've got to start understanding. We've got to stop waiting for someone in the Democrats to do something. We've got to start doing something. Last week, I was in D.C., and I saw Van Jones speak, and I'll have that video up very soon. It might be up today at Campaign for America's Future, and by the way, that's at ourfuture.org. I saw Van Jones speak, and, you know, he's really good, and he spoke about reminding us that not long ago, nobody had ever heard of the Tea Party, and the Republicans were just, you know, with their heads down, didn't know what they were going to do. And here we are, how much later, just totally being, you know, wiped out by the conservative forces. And what he's trying to say is that, you know, tide can turn, and we got to realize the tide will turn, that we can make it turn. But the main thing I'm getting at that he said that applies to what we're talking about and what Jude said is he said, you know, Obama wasn't going around the country saying, yes, I can. You know, we keep saying Obama's got to do so-and-so or the Democrats got to do so-and-so or everything. Whatever, one thing that we got to learn from Wisconsin is that it's, yes, we can. It's up to us. And if we don't see people doing the right thing, then we've got to go out and do the right thing. And we've got to make them do the right thing. So that's something really encouraging to see from Wisconsin and that's happening here, I think, that we should take from this all that's happening.
Yes. And you know, for God's sakes, at least have the sense that when you see a parade, go and run out in front of it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, there was, I thought it was very interesting today that the blogosphere, the official blogosphere, was virtually silent over the fact that Anonymous is calling for a shutdown of the Federal Reserve and all of their branch offices on March 24th. And I thought, oh, this is perfect because it gets all those, it gets everybody, you know. It gets liberals, it gets like the Ron Paul people, it gets the right wing, you know, whatever. Everybody agrees that they don't like what the Fed has done to the country. And, you know, and I sent this to somebody and they just said, well, we don't think that this is an appropriate strategy because blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you guys just don't get it, do you?
Susie, is there a website for people to go to learn about the actions they can get involved in for the March 24th?
Let's see.
Well, you look for that. Tomorrow is a big day for websites. Move On is trying to organize things around the country after work.
Right.
And go to Move On and look for what's going on tomorrow, because tomorrow is the Defend the American Dream Day. So look for that. And then there's a big one coming up on April 15th. That's the day Martin Luther King was assassinated. And what he was doing was he was in Memphis, right?
That was April 4th.
Nashville. Pardon?
That was April 4th.
April 4th, not April 15th. April 4th, right.
April 15th,
that's the day he was there defending public workers, public employees. He was there to organize public employees. And so I know AFL-CIO and a bunch of other organizations, including Campaign for America's Future, are organizing April 4th, a big day on April 4th. But tomorrow there's a Move On organizing, trying to spread the spirit of Wisconsin and get people involved and sign up. Susie, did you find the Shut Down the Fed Day for March 24th?
Yeah, it's March 28th.
March 28th?
March 28th. It's at all the 12 district Fed offices. It's on ampedstatus.org.
Ah, good.
Which is, you know, anonymous kind of keeps all that kind of information kind of decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so ampedstatus is reporting on it?
So that there isn't just like one site. I'm sure somebody somewhere has stuff on it. But you can find that on my site, SusieMadrach.com.
Good.
And, you know, I just think, wow, this is like, it's a, you know, again, it's something visceral. It's like, and what they're calling for is civil disobedience. They said, we want to keep them from getting into the building. They can't do any harm to us if they're not in the building, which is not necessarily true. I mean, because they can work from home.
Or they'll stand out across the street with their smartphones and do shit. But
right, but they're at, you know, this is like from 6 o'clock in the morning.
But we'll be making a point.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And this is the kind of thing, and they want it to be a multi-day protest. They want to see the crowd growing, you know, over days. They're also asking people to go to the Bank of America headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina, and any Federal Reserve branch locations that you have in your city. You know, and I just thought, wow, this is a great idea. And I've been kind of following it on Twitter all day just through the hashtag. Young people under the radar are pretty excited about this. In the official kind of the world, Dave, that you and I travel in, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really hoping that this, you know, turns out to be something. I also feel the same way about the U.S. Uncut movement.
Well, I know I ran across it at a few sites today. I just don't remember where.
Yeah.
There's another one. Something about Bank of America has a lot of this, where Anonymous was talking about the Bank of America thing. There was a website. Do you remember the name of that site?
It might have been the same.
That's where I saw it, one of them. Anyway, so that's another place people can go for information on this.
Yeah, well, if you just Google, you know, Anonymous Bank of America, somebody's going to have it somewhere. And that's kind of the beauty of their movement. They are so decentralized. They do just get the stuff out there. You know, you can find it. But I'm just so fascinated by that's the way that establishment Democrats rarely think. They don't think about things like that. So okay, fine. My philosophy is always, if you don't like what they're doing, go around and do it your way. But it was interesting. I saw a couple things today that were pretty disturbing. One was that, what's his face? The guy in Wisconsin, who's the Senate Majority Leader?
Scott Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald is saying that the Wisconsin 14 will not be permitted to vote on anything.
Well, they're not going to be permitted to vote in committee on things. That's his proposal anyway, saying they're still in contempt. Now, I don't know. I'm no parliamentarian. I don't know if that's allowable under the Senate rules, but they don't really seem to give too much of a crap about rules right now anyway.
No, they don't.
So I don't, you know, that's, there are going to be more legal challenges to what's been going on in Wisconsin than you can shake a stick at, and they're going to be winding their way through the courts for probably the better part of a decade upcoming.
And hopefully you're going to win this next judicial election.
The April 5th Kloppenburg Supreme Court thing, that would be a big bonus to us, because the guy in that seat right now, Prosser, was appointed by the Republicans just basically as their lackey, and that's what he's promised to do. He said a vote for me is a vote for Walker. So hopefully we can.
Well, there you go. Let's
get that seat. I don't think people around the country know just how pissed off people in Wisconsin are. Just last weekend, the farmers came to town on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
And there were between 50 and 60 people that, at their own expense, hauled their tractors down to Madison and drove around the square and then had to take them home, you know, and nobody paid for that. Some of them might have gotten some gas money donations from people in the crowd. No, there was no organizing activity there. It's just, you know, enough people that are angry enough to voice their displeasure. And the challenge now is to take all of that anger and that passion and that energy and to channel it into things like Supreme Court election and recall petitions and that sort of thing. And from what I saw today, for the 8 Republican senators that are up for recall, people have obtained about 50% of the signatures they need, which is good news. But, you know, the last 25% are always going to be the hardest ones to get.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can take all that energy and put it to good use and, you know, put some wins in the column for the good guys. And hopefully people will remember. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
You know, you think go ahead.
I just want to take a brief break. It's 9:30. I just want to remind people to call in the number 646-200-3440. Next Thursday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, it'll be Jay Ackroyd and Stuart Zechman talking further about liberalism, unions, and democracy. And at 9 p.m. Eastern, it'll be Jay interviewing author Chelsea Green. And Woody Tesh, who's the founder of Slow Money and chairman emeritus of Investor Circle. And they'll be talking about local investing strategies for healthy and vibrant economies. Next Sunday, March 20th, beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern, Marcy Wheeler talking with former Ambassador Joe Wilson about the tensions and trade-offs between transparency and security in a free society. Okay. This is it's pretty interesting, isn't it? I just keep looking at these guys and thinking, where did they get the nerve? and why does it work?
They get the nerve because they've got a lot of really rich people backing them up, and they know that the cliche is that a politician's number one job is that they are working for re-election, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to continue their own job. I don't know if they just didn't know how unpopular it would be, but in the face of a lot of sustained public opposition, a lot of the Republicans here have just doubled down on pissing people off. And I don't know if they think they're going to get any of these, you know, cushy think tank positions when they get out. That usually doesn't happen for state legislators, you know.
Yeah.
But they've got a lot of big bucks behind them, and they're not afraid of backlash, it seems. I don't know.
It really ticked me off that I read today. And this is in Ohio. Reporters have been told they will not be allowed to broadcast sound and images from the Tuesday release of Ohio Governor John Kasich's budget plan. Spokeswoman Connie Wehrkamp says journalists can bring only pens, notepads, and tape recorders to the afternoon briefing. Videos and photos will be prohibited, and audio may not be used for anything but checking accuracy. I'm reading this, and I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, I was a reporter for 20 years. That just wouldn't happen.
They haven't introduced me yet.
Oh, you're here. Okay. Chris, hi. This is Chris Savage, and he's from Michigan.
Hello.
Yes, Chris, you're there.
I am here.
Yeah. Just talking about, you know, all the different crazy crap that they just do and think they're going to get away with. And you're right on time.
And Susie said a bad word on the air.
Right. That's good. I love internet radio.
Yeah.
Internet.
Oh, that's right. We're on the internet.
That's right. We get to say that stuff. Why don't you just give us a sort of a brief overview for people who haven't been following Michigan of the kind of craziness that's been going on in your state?
Right. So in 2010, Michigan basically, Democrats in Michigan lost everything. We lost the Supreme Court. We lost the Senate. We lost the House. We lost the governor's office. So we are essentially, you know, completely without any political power to speak of at the state level. The guy that was elected as our governor is Rick Snyder. He first made his national splash with his Super Bowl ad a year ago, and he calls himself the Nerd Governor. He's never held a public office before. He is literally only experienced as a CEO. He's done some work with like a business group called Spark in Michigan to try to bring businesses in, but he's never led a government in any way. And somehow managed to convince Michigan voters that he was a better choice than a very populist guy named Virg Bonero, who his claim to fame was the most angry mayor in America when he appeared on MSNBC. Apparently, Michigan Democrats don't like angry, and they don't like anger, and they liked this nerdy guy with a nasal voice who seemed like somebody's dad, and even in the sort of liberal bastion of Ann Arbor where I live, and where Rick Snyder is from, he got elected. Rick Snyder is handling things completely different than Scott Walker did. Scott Walker is being very brazen about his disdain and for the unions. Rick Snyder's playing it very cool. He's saying, "Oh no, you know, I'll work with the unions. You know, I'm totally fine working with unions, no problem at all." And he can get away with that because he's got a Senate and a House of Representatives that is full of union-hating Republicans, and they have all the power. So he's essentially standing out in front and playing it really cool and saying all the right things and letting the Republicans in Congress do all the dirty work for him. And, you know, reading Michael Moore's letter to Michiganders today, he said there's been literally 40 bills that could be considered anti-union introduced in Michigan since the beginning of the year, just 2 months, 3 months. And some of the more odious ones, the one that was recently passed was one that Rachel Maddow's been making a big deal about, which basically expands the power of the governor to declare financial emergencies in municipalities. The governor has always had that power, but this bill takes it to a level that's above and beyond anything that it's had before, to the point where this emergency financial manager, who is sort of appointed to run things, can dismiss the elected officials. They can cancel contracts, and that includes with unions. So that, of course, has got the unions all upset and essentially puts them into super czar status. Which is rather ironic, given the anti-czar fervor of the Republicans in the last couple years. So that one has got people extremely upset. Another one that's coming down the pike is a bill to make Michigan a right-to-work state, so that it further would diminish the power of unions in Michigan. And as you know, Michigan, you know, we're a union state. There's no question about it. So these are very sharp pokes in the eye with a stick to the unions. So, you know, Rick Snyder can stand above the fray, and he has to do is sign the bill, you know, but he's letting other people take the heat for him. So it's a little different than what Scott Walker's doing.
Well,
it's hard to hear that. I was a chief steward at AFSCME in Ann Arbor a long time ago.
Well, Ann Arbor voted for Rick Snyder big time, and that was very, very disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm an organizer here. We ran a pretty hardcore GOTV operation, but we could not convince a lot of Democrats in Ann Arbor not to vote for a Republican, and that was really hard.
Well, hopefully they won't ever make that mistake again ever in life.
Do you think that this
I'm still not sure that they don't think he's a nice guy because he's able to pull this off the way he's doing it.
Do you think it had to do with sort of the packaging? Like, oh, he's a nerd and people identified with him?
Believe that. I don't know if you saw Virg Bonero when he appeared on MSNBC a couple times, but he's an angry dude sometimes. He gets fired up. He's a populist. He's an Ed Schultz kind of guy. I mean, he gets red in the face. He sweats. He sputters. And, you know, he's on the side of the little guy. And that really turned off Democratic voters for some reason. I think I don't know if they're just so sick of anger and fear that they didn't want to hear it from their own side or what the story was. But Rick Snyder, he beat out a lot of people. He beat out people like Pete Hoekstra and stuff like Hoekstra and people like that, and it sort of came out of nowhere. And everybody thought, wow, he's this sort of moderate Republican. Maybe we can get some stuff done. But I really see it as a wolf in sheep's clothing, really. All the same things will happen eventually that would have happened under somebody like Scott Walker.
Yeah, I mean, if you can make it through the various hoops and sand traps of the Republican Party to get to the point where you can run for statewide office, you have to be a little bit wacky. You know, because that's who their primary voters are now, you know. So if you've impressed the primary voters enough to get that backing, there's probably something wrong with you.
One of the things that he's doing right now that's interesting in terms of his losing some support among the Tea Party Republicans is that his budget, in addition to doing the normal Republican things like cutting, you know, education funds and raising pensions in addition to the cutting of the funds for students and for children and cutting the earned income tax credit, which benefits working poor, he's also proposing to raise or to institute a tax on public and private pensions. And that's where he crossed a line for a lot of Tea Party people. So while he is a Republican, he's not far enough right to suit some of the Tea Partiers, so he's going to lose a little bit of support there. Whether or not long term that hurts him, I don't know. But he's raising, basically he's raising taxes and cutting funding for poor people, elderly people, and children to the tune of nearly $2 billion. And there's a concurrent tax break for businesses of about an equal amount. So he literally is paying for tax breaks for corporations on the backs of poor people and children and the working poor. So it's pretty blatant.
In other words, he's a pretty traditional Republican.
Yeah, he is. But again, he doesn't look that way because he says all the right things. He's got all the people in Congress doing his dirty work for him. He just signs the bills. And one of the things that he did that I blogged about this week that's just the most galling to me is that in his budget bill, he's basically broken the budget into two bills, which is unusual. Usually the budget is composed of specific bills for specific agencies. He's lumping everything into two bills. One covers education, the one covers everything else. And that really prevents a lot of oversight of individual departments and programs by Congress. It basically allocates money to these groups and lets them spend it how they want to. But in that bill that raises that creates a tax on pensions and cuts your earned income tax credit for the working poor, they put in a $100 appropriation. It's on page 182 of a 183-page bill, and it's a $100 appropriation to fund this. And by doing that, he makes it ineligible for a citizen referendum. So if this bill is passed,
oh,
we can't fight it as citizens.
It's brilliant. Well, I'm wondering now. I know that you're active in the Democratic Party, and you also work for OFA. And by the way, I want to mention Chris's blog, which is Exlexa Blog, and he's also a blogger at Blogging for Michigan, and he's also a Daily Kos Diarist of the Year. What are you guys planning to do in terms of legal action? Is any of this stuff, do you consider any of this stuff illegal or?
That really remains to be seen. I think that the Republicans are pretty shrewd about making sure that they've got all their legal things covered. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. We have a very, very bulldogish kind of party chair here in Michigan. Mark Brewer is pretty aggressive. So if there's a legal standing, I would expect Mark Brewer will be all over that. But this stuff's all just happening right now. They literally just passed the emergency financial manager bill last week, and all these other bills are still sort of pending and happening. They're so audacious. They asked the guy who sponsored the emergency financial manager bill how he felt about these protesters, because there's been several very, very loud union protests about that. And, they literally interrupted some of the hearings and stuff. And his response was, well, I don't think it had an effect outside of the fact we had to talk a little bit louder today. So, you know, that's the kind of attitude that we're up against. And because Democrats have no political power, it's really frustrating. You know, I mean, we can have protests and we can wave signs and stuff, but at the end of the day, you know, we don't really have a whole lot of power to affect change until, you know, the next election, basically.
Well, that's... that's because if you limit yourself to within the electoral system, I mean, there's all kinds of things people can do. For example, I would be stalking every Republican official with somebody with a video camera to catch them doing something. If it's good enough for James O'Keefe, I mean, by God, it should be good enough for Democrats. I would be finding out, well, we already know in Wisconsin, somebody who's living with his girlfriend and is not in his district. But those are the kind of things you have to think like Republicans. You have to get the dirt on people. And then you have
to. It's a really strange place to go.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, Republicans do it all the time when they want to work with somebody. You got to do what works.
Foreign territory for Democrats.
Well, it's a stretch. It's not the comfort zone. But
we know it works
because the Republicans do it all the time, and it has.
I don't know. Is that true though? Because James O'Keefe got totally busted for doing something here about 6 months ago, and it hasn't affected him at all. He still managed to get the head of NPR fired. So, really, does it matter? They just ignore it and keep going. They just pretend it didn't happen. I mean, even James O'Keefe, who gets busted for it, keeps on going and getting people fired.
Yeah, but you're missing the flip side of that, which is that James O'Keefe, even though we know he's a liar and he re-edits this stuff, still manages to get results, doesn't he?
That's true.
This is what I mean. Democrats try too hard to be rational. And
Susie, you don't have to edit tapes and make stuff up when you're going after Republicans,
That's a good point.
Yes, you can stick with it. Which, by the way,
Hold on.
Okay.
O'Keefe only wins these battles because the people he goes after surrender to him. Okay?
NPR, not the guy who did it, yeah.
Yeah.
NPR, Acorn, Congress bailed on Acorn. Federal government with Shirley Sherrod. Okay, the people he goes after surrender to him. If you make the same sort of attack on a Republican, they're going to fight back at you. Okay, they're counterpunchers. Okay, the fake David Koch phone call to Scott Walker. If Scott Walker had been Democratic governor, he would have already resigned.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Scott Walker said, I didn't do anything wrong, and just stuck with it. And, it's really stupid from the idea of, the unexamined life's not worth living, but in the sense of it keeps him in power, it's a really smart play.
Exactly.
Okay,
like Al Gore dropping out in 2000, same sort of thing, over and over.
Right.
I just don't get the whole thing of rolling over and playing dead. That's this whole thing of people just don't know how to go. They don't know how to play effective defense.
Well, I don't think they've been in fights in their lives. I don't think I really don't.
I'm a female. It's not like I was rolling around in the dirt getting into fist fights, but I certainly don't have that attitude about anything.
I remember girls' fights at school. They were pretty rough.
Well, and there were girls that did fight. I just wasn't one of them. I did get punched a lot. I wasn't one of the ones starting it. But there's still this whole thing of just rolling. Well, there's a tiny grain of truth to what they're saying, so I guess we better let them win. And where the hell that comes from, I don't know. I sometimes think that all the fight has just been bred out of Democrats. I just don't understand it. It's
they're competing for the same money that the Republicans have. Okay,
so they
have to roll over to please the same, and they don't understand that, coming in second place on their podium still means you're getting the crap kicked out of you. Okay.
But what they haven't seemed to figure out, though, I think it was you who said it earlier tonight, that if you fight for people, they support you. Well, the whole point of collecting all that money to run for election is to win your election. And, maybe you don't need $15 million in campaign ads if people see that you fought for them. We have lots of instances of Republicans far outspending Democrats and the Democrats winning anyway because they were fighting Democrats.
The one thing that I... I watched, you know, I'm in the 7th District of Michigan, and for 2 years, the last 2 years, we've had a really amazingly good congressman. Mark Schauer was really good, and he was a, you know, he was a tough campaigner. And running against a guy who calls himself the original Tea Partier, Tim Walberg, and he played every card he had in his pocket to the extent that, you know, to a Republican extent, I would say. He took things a little bit farther than they probably should have been taken in some regards in terms of, you know, really hammering in, for example, on wanting to do away with the Social Security system and things like that. And it didn't work for him. It didn't work for him because I don't think that Democrats are seen as credible when they go to that place. You know, Democrats, you know, you can put it on the campaigner or the candidates, but you can also put it on the voters too, because when somebody steps up and does some of that stuff, people like Alan Grayson and stuff, they're not rewarded for it at the polls.
Hey, let me ask you a question, because you weren't on earlier. In Michigan, against that congressman, what were the ads like that they were running, and how much money came in with this anonymous corporate money?
Oh, it was actually, we had the groups that were supporting Walberg actually spent more money in Michigan than anywhere else, the outside money. But I have to say, again, Schauer gave it right back to him, and he was just as vicious in his ads, very, you know, appealing to very emotional, visceral kinds of things. But again, I just don't think it really played well with Democrats. I don't think they like that, you know.
Running ads against him saying Democrats cut Medicare?
Not so much, and I think the reason for that was because Schauer was running those against him. Mm-hmm. You know, he was being very. In fact, he actually put Tim Walberg in defense mode to the point where Tim Walberg had to bring his mother into one of his ads. It was awesome.
And so,
like 75 or 80.
It was about Democrats didn't deliver jobs, right?
Yeah,
right, exactly right. That's what it came down to.
10% unemployment, you're going to have a hard time winning elections
right. If
you're the party in power.
In Michigan especially, we were like the second highest unemployment rate or something.
Yeah, behind Nevada, it was Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even think it was so much about that they didn't create jobs. They did take care of the people who couldn't get jobs.
Yeah, that too.
They let the unemployment just fall off the radar. They didn't fight for it. Look how much. What do we have? 2 million 99ers? 2 million? Some ridiculous.
More numbers. Every day.
Of people whose unemployment ran out, can't get jobs. They're in their 50s. They're never going to get jobs again. But, you know, I know more people telling me that they're thinking about killing themselves because they don't know how they're going to pay their mortgage. You know, and it's not. You know, you didn't have to find jobs for those people. All you had to do was extend the unemployment, add another tier, back when we had control of the House.
Or just fight for it, even if you couldn't get it done.
Yes, fight for it. You know, Dave, I'm sure you've heard my story about calling up all these people last March and saying, what are you guys doing to add another tier of unemployment benefits? And all these different congressional offices were saying, oh, well, you know, we don't see a lot of political will for that out there. And, you know, my response was, you're Democrat.
Yeah.
Somebody has to give you permission, or they have to hold a gun to your head to get you to fight for unemployment benefits. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I think that had an awful lot to do with this election.
I think so.
You know, just insane. Just insane. Democrats keep trying to reproduce Republican policies instead of Republican attack strategies. You know, it's like they want to adopt everything. And, you know, the same sorts of policies. Like the fact that we're even talking about Social Security at this point just enrages me.
Yep.
Oh, and now we're talking about, well, what kind of compromises can we make on budget cuts? Excuse me? We're in a major recession.
I've got a compromise you could make. You could put a financial transaction tax on the Wall Street, and you could put a surtax on the billionaires, and you could cut the military, and then we can talk about other stuff.
And you could end the war, and you could cut the benefits for members of Congress after they leave Congress, you know, that they wouldn't get health care ad infinitum. You know, there's a lot of things that they could have done. But the fact, the fact that we have, you know, people like Chuck Schumer out there, well, you know, let's be reasonable about this. I'm like, you know, reasonable, if you walk down the street right now, I would spit on him. I really would. I have no respect for these people anymore, because they have no respect for the people of the United States. They have respect for lobbyists.
Well, that's who they see. That's who they deal with.
I was just in Washington last week, and I got to tell you, it's a different world. You know, you go down,
you walk down
a street, and you don't see boarded up stores or empty storefronts, and you don't see nail salons everywhere, and you don't see, you know, people. At least in the areas where I was, you know, I know parts of Washington are pretty bad, but they've always ignored those parts of Washington. But it's nice in Washington and around Washington. And they, not only that, they even have a metro. They have public transportation already. So, you know, and things like that. It's just a different world in Washington. And they're just not seeing it. They're not near it. They don't have to deal with it every day like I do. I mean, you know, I live near Menlo Park and Palo Alto, California, wealthy areas. Menlo Park's got a dozen empty storefronts, and Palo Alto, the main street, has empty storefront after empty storefront on it. It's amazing. You know, and I just did, you know, I was in Michigan, and I don't have to talk about what it's like there. You know, man, it's like they just don't see it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things that we've noticed, like here in Philadelphia, it used to be that when people were running for re-election, they would come to our local Drinking Liberally because there were so many bloggers there, and they would come stuck up to us, you know, to get us to endorse them. And one of the things that one of the waitresses at the place pointed out to us was that they never carried their own money. Their staffers carried the money. So they, you know, they don't even know what it costs to have a sandwich and a beer in a restaurant, because they don't have to think about it. Their hands don't have to touch that stuff.
Well, I have to say, you know, I knew Mark Schauer pretty well, and he's about as down-to-earth of a guy as you can meet. So, you could characterize these guys that way, but they're not all that way. You know, we need to promote the guys. We need to promote these men and women who are reasonable, you know, and who are down-to-earth and who are accessible.
You are spot on. You know, we said this earlier in the show, too. You are spot on. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just, you know, when I hear these descriptions of people like that, I look around, and in the district I'm in, we had Mark Schauer, who was a freshman and really, really solid. And then in the 15th district right next to me, we have John Dingell. And, you know, say what you want about John Dingell, he supports some extremely progressive things. He's changed, you know, been forced to change by the electorate on some things that I think he was weak on. But at the end of the day, he's one of the more progressive people out there. And, you know, so I'm going to give some of these guys credit. You know, they're not all that bad. And the thing is, if we promote this anti-politician thing, it doesn't really help us very much. So we have to figure out a way to promote the ones that are solid, because they're out there. They're not all bad.
Rewarding good behavior, like in Wisconsin, where they're raising so much money now for the Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly.
Court, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, yep. I mean, I know I have a more radical view than most people, but, you know, you guys are taking the long view, and I don't know that we have that long. We have a lot of things that are happening really fast. This right-wing takeover is accelerating, and it's bad, and it's probably more extreme than any of us ever dreamed we'd see in our lifetime. So, I don't know that the electoral process is going to change much of that at this point.
You know, I want to recommend to anybody listening to this that if you haven't read it, there's the book called The Shock Doctrine. It's probably the most important book for understanding what's happening to us and what's been happening to us for some time. I mean, it just lays out this strategy of getting everybody afraid of something and then just pushing through these radical programs that we're seeing before you get a chance to react. And then afterwards, it's too late, because they've sold off, you know, they've sold off public stuff. They've got the policies changed, like the right to work law coming in Michigan and stuff like that. That's going to be very hard to recover from that. So I recommend the Shock Doctrine.
It's never too late, okay?
It'll be hard.
There's always fighting.
Right.
Who said that because something is hard, it's not worth doing? Okay?
Right.
It's always going to be hard fighting against entrenched interests. They're the ones with the money. They're the ones who have all the power and the influence, and we're the ones who just have our voices and our votes, and it's always going to be hard. But that's our job.
Well, making your job. I'm not getting paid for it.
Well, that's a beautiful wrap-up for the hour, isn't it?
I'm just saying that it has to be a combination of two things. You can't just have a long-term strategy. You need a short-term one, too.
Yeah.
You know, because these guys, you have to play hardball with these guys. They're just, you know, these are not nice people. You know, these people are, I know it's not polite to use the word, but they're basically fascists.
Well, it's kind of the literal definition of the word is kind of coming true.
Yeah. So, you know,
corporate alignment with the government. Oh, sorry.
Well, I don't think you have to go so far as to say fascist. I just say you have to say that they're interested in the interests of the super rich, and most of us are not that. But we've got numbers, and we've got our voices, and we're going to fight. And there's no rolling over on the part of the people. Just because our elected representatives do that means we replace them with better ones. That's all.
Yeah. More and better Democrats, too.
I want to thank everybody for being on tonight. Dave Johnson, Jude Tosh, Chris Savage. It's been, obviously, a spirited discussion. Please, everybody.
Can I plug a big rally? We have actually two big rallies this week in Michigan.
Sure,
at the state capitol. Tomorrow there's the AARP actually has a It's Not Fair rally, and then on Wednesday is the big rally, which is actually co-sponsored by MoveOn.org and the UAW and the AFL-CIO and a whole bunch of other groups, and that's from noon to 6 at the Capitol. That's the big one, so I encourage anybody in Michigan and the surrounding areas that has time, stop by, bring your sign, let's make some noise.
Okay, absolutely. Don't sit on your asses, do something. Thanks, everybody, for being on, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for the invite, Susie.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure.